Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pope John Paul II.
I have come here to pay homage to Mahatma Gandhi, hero of humanity. Mahatma Gandhi told that if all men and women, whatever the differences between them, cling to the truth with respect for the unique dignity of every human being, a new world order, a new world order, a civilization of love can be achieved. May God guide us and bless us as we strive to walk together, hand in hand, and build together a world of peace.
And I'm going to remind His Holy Father how important His voice is. And I'm going to remind His Holy Father how important His voice is in making it easier for politicians like me to be able to kind of stand and defend our positions that are, I think, you know, very important positions to take.
Mr. President, final question.
Yes, sir.
You said famously, when you looked into Vladimir Putin's eyes, you saw his soul.
Yeah.
When you look into Benedict XVI's eyes, what do you see?
God.
When you look into Benedict XVI's eyes, what do you see?
God.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, on September 11th, 1991.
Certain that we stand at a defining hour. Halfway around the world, we are engaged in a great struggle in the skies and on the seas and sands. We know why we're there. We are Americans, part of something larger than ourselves. For two centuries, we've done the hard work of freedom, and tonight, we lead the world in facing down a threat to decency and humanity. What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Washington, D.C., at the Kennedy Center on C-SPAN, President Bill Clinton.
And after 1989, President Bush said, and it was a phrase that I often use much, that we needed a new world order, and instead it looks like we got a lot of disorder.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce the Vice President of the United States, Jesuit Joe Biden.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again.
I believe we, and particularly you, your class, has an incredible window of opportunity to lead in shaping a new world order for the 21st century. In a way consistent with American interest and the common interest.
And what he means by the new world order, they're just ushering in the old world order. Greetings and welcome to Mystery Babylon News Radio on October 31st, 2014. My name is Walt Stickle, and I'll be your host for the next 45 minutes, and my co-host is Tom Frest of First Amendment Radio at Inquisition Update. October 31st, 1517 was the day that Martin Luther nailed the 95 Theses on the Wittenberg Church. Happy Reformation Day. Tonight's broadcast is a continuation of part 3 of the series that I'm doing on the 10th chapter of John Daniel's book, and it's the Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid shaping events during the 1700s. Well, we're laying foundation first, and the title of the series of this is the Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid shaping events in 2014, and we'll be laying the foundation with the Ford, Chris Pinto's Ford on Washington in the Lap of Rome by Justin Fulton. This is the groundwork that we're going to do for a later broadcast. This is a riveting read. And tonight's broadcast, Tom is going to start. He's just finishing off the subtitle, Rome in Prophecy, Warnings from Heaven. The next subtitle that he will address is Rome and World Dominion. Now, I will read a paragraph ahead, and then when I turn it over to Tom, he will start reading Revelation 17:18, and the woman which thou sawest is the great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Revelation 17:18. So I'm going to read the paragraph above that and then turn it over to Tom. There are some who argue that the woman sits on seven mountains rather than hills, thinking that this is an inconsistency, but in Greek the word for mountain, Oris, also applies to hills, or mounds that rise up from the earth. Perhaps most importantly to the subject of this book is the great harlot's manipulation of the kings of the earth.
And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Revelation chapter 17, verse 18. Most people who read the Bible understand that God uses a characteristic convention where he acknowledges churches as women. A faithful church who worships God according to spirit and to truth is called a chaste virgin by the Lord in the Scriptures. But those churches which worship false gods, as did his believers in Israel at times in apostasy, he regarded them as whores. And this very chapter, Revelation chapter 17, describes this whore who worships other gods. And this is the woman that is spoken of here in Revelation chapter 17, verse 18. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. This woman is a whore, worships false gods. In other words, and the false church which thou sawest is that great city. Now, what city is he talking about? Obviously, Rome, the city of seven hills, which reigneth over the kings of the earth, as we can any one of us see. If we Google the title of any head of state in the world, plus the word Pope, and go to Google Images and see for ourselves the images of all the governments of the world, the leaders of the governments of the world bending knees before the Pope. This is a dead ringer. This is an apostate church, which is also a great city that rules over the kings of the earth. There cannot be a mistake. God has told us in the most clear and convincing terms. He's described this woman in living color. She's decked in scarlet and purple. That's the color of her cardinals and her bishops. Cardinals wear scarlet, bishops wear purple. and she's decked with gold and silver and precious stones. If you want to see the most precious stones on the earth, where do you go to see them? The Vatican. On the papal tiaras, everywhere, on the statues, the rosaries, gold plates, gold-plated icons everywhere in the Vatican. She's wealthy beyond any human comprehension. Decked in gold and silver and precious stones, and you know what else? She has a golden cup in her hand. And what does that represent but the Eucharistic cup? The golden cup, it's required in Roman Catholic canon law that if it not be of pure gold, then it must be of silver or some other precious metal, and then plated with gold inside and out. That's the Roman Catholic Church. This is the most descriptive passage of Scripture that you'll find to convince the world, as were the Protestant Reformers, the Puritans, the Waldenses, the Albigenses, the Hussites, the Huguenots, all the slain of the earth, recognized this description in the Bible of the Roman Catholic Church. What does this also indicate to us? And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. It's not only a church, it's a city. And more than a city, it's a city-state. It is the smallest city-state in the world. It is both a church and a state. It is the perfect union of church and state. And don't you know, if Rome had her way, that's what the United States would be. A perfect union between church and state. The Roman Catholic Church and the state. And that's exactly what's happening right now before our very eyes. A union of church and state. And you know what's horrifying about that? It's not a chaste virgin. It's the whore of Rome that is uniting with our state. And dragging along behind her skirt are all the ecumenical evangelibellies that bought the bait of Vatican Council II and go about preaching peace and unity with this whore of Rome, and are joining with the Roman Catholic Church in their efforts to control this government and to make what they will tell you is a Christian government and a Christian nation. But I inform my listeners that it's not Christianity at all. It is Roman Catholicism. Now, continuing with the text, it says in the 1599 edition of the Geneva Bible, the Bible of the Pilgrims, the Geneva Bible, the Reformed teachers of that era wrote, quote, "Very children know what that seven-hilled city is, which is so much spoken of, and whereof Virgil reporteth, and compasseth seven towers in one wall. That city is, which when John wrote these things, had rule over the kingdoms of the earth." Unquote. What about Rome and world domination? Here's a quote from Virgil in his Aeneid, quote, "Rome will begin her march to glory, to worldwide rule, to spirit that rivals heaven. Roman, remember, govern, rule the world." Who was Virgil speaking of? None other than the Roman Catholic Church. It says the above quote from the ancient poet Virgil probably has more influence on the covert powers at work in the founding of the United States than most Christians would like to admit, or that most Christians in this country have any idea of. Even among conspiracy theorists, They fail to recognize the ancient lust for power that has emanated steadily from Rome. The Latin phrase, novus ordo seclorum, currently found on the back of the dollar bill and often translated New World Order, comes from the writings of Virgil, along with the prophecy that Rome is destined to rule the world. From Virgil's fourth eclogue we read, quote, "Now comes the last age of the Cumaean song. The great order of the ages rises anew. Now the Virgin returns, and Saturn's reign returns. Now a new generation is sent down from high heaven, and a golden age will arise in all the world." Unquote. Virgil is literally predicting the New World Order, which is simply a resurrection of the Old World Order, where the Virgin Mary ruled supreme and Saturn's reign returns. Remember, Saturn is just an alliteration of Satan. This is known in the secret societies. Saturn is just another name for Satan. So we have the Virgin, the Queen of Heaven, who is worshipped in all of the pagan religions. Even to this day, they all have a female goddess, a virgin typically. And this the Roman Catholic Church has adopted in Mary. So we have a global religion that worships a virgin and Satan himself to create a new generation, a golden age arising in all the world, a global apostate church led by the Roman Catholic Church. That's the New World Order. There's nothing new about it. It's as old as the Tower of Babel, the Tower of Babylon, the unification of all the world's religions to commit apostasy and abominations before the creator of all heaven and earth, to worship the sun and the moon and the stars and the earth and a man on a throne in Rome. Once one realizes that Romanism is really the marriage of paganism and Christianity, it becomes clear that the face of Caesar hides behind the mask of the Catholic Saint Peter. Long ago, the popes took to themselves the title Pontifex Maximus, once held by the Roman emperors. While the Vatican's ambition for world domination can be traced back 1,000 years through the Catholic Church, it would seem that the papal throne has embraced the myths that once inspired the Roman people to seek absolute rule and authority. A significant event is found under Pope Alexander VI, who drafted the Treaty of Tordesillas in 1494. The Pope literally drew a line down the map of the whole world and gave the Western Hemisphere to Spain and the Eastern Hemisphere to Portugal, giving them authority to conquer both sides of the planet in the name of the Holy Roman Empire. The treaty was drafted just months after Christopher Columbus returned from his discovery of America. Once the light of knowledge fell on these new lands, the self-appointed Vicar of Christ, the Pope of Rome, declared them all to be under his authority, and to this day has never revoked that claim. Christopher Columbus himself was sent abroad by the Spanish monarchs Ferdinand and Isabella, the faithful servants of Rome, who also founded the Spanish Inquisition. Despite the claim of some historians who tell us that he came to, quote, spread Christianity, unquote, in the heathen lands, the truth is that Christopher Columbus came to further the Holy Roman Empire, the Roman Catholic Empire. And anybody who studied the history of Christopher Columbus can tell you that he slaughtered thousands and thousands of Native Americans who would not bend the knee to the Pope. Even they had sense enough not to worship a man. martyr's blood on American soil. Few Christians today realize that nearly half a century before the English settlers at Jamestown in 1607 or the pilgrims at Plymouth in 1620 landed in the New World, there was a colony of French Huguenots in 1565 that were murdered in Florida at the hands of Rome. Now remember, this is 1565. This is earlier than most people recognize the beginning of the move to the colonies. This was only 48 years after Martin Luther led the Protestant Reformation. This is very, very early. Did you know that French Huguenots, French Calvinist Protestants, seeking religious liberty and freedom from persecution in Roman Catholic France, risked their lives and came to this country and settled in Florida? Listen to this. The Huguenots were Bible-believing Christians who embraced the teachings of the Protestant Reformation. In 1564, they established a French colony named Fort Caroline in what is today known as Jacksonville, Florida. Their colony was beset with problems and ultimately only lasted a year. When the devoutly Roman Catholic King Philip of Spain learned of the colony, he dispatched a ship of papal soldiers to come against them. After a series of conflicts between their commanders, the French Huguenots ultimately surrendered, assuming they would receive civil treatment as prisoners. Their Romanist captors, however, had other ideas. The Huguenots were coerced to renounce their Protestant faith and be converted to Catholicism. When they refused, they were put to death. Now I ask my listeners, before I continue, did this early event of religious persecution, extirpation, and annihilation of Protestants in this early day of 1564, was it an omen of how this country would end with the persecution, extirpation, and annihilation of Bible-believing Protestants? The book continues. He said the inlet where the Huguenots were killed would be named Matanzas, which means slaughter in Spanish. The official government website, the official United States government website for the Fort Matanzas National Monument, describes what happened to these Protestant martyrs at the hands of the Spanish Catholic commander Menendez. Quote, having lost most of their food and weapons in the shipwreck, they, the French Huguenots, the French Calvinist Protestants, did surrender. However, when Menendez then demanded that they give up their Protestant faith and accept Catholicism, they refused. 111 Frenchmen were killed. Only 16 were spared, a few professing being Catholic. 2 weeks later, the sequence of events was repeated. More French survivors appeared at the inlet, again refusing to give up their faith. This time, 134 were killed. Unquote. Incredibly, this official government, this official United States government website, asked the following questions concerning the actions of this murderous band of Roman Catholics. Quote, was this a cruel, cold-hearted act by the Spanish? Was Pedro Menendez blindly following orders to rid Florida of the interlopers? Perhaps, as leader of his people, Menendez knew that survival of the French in October might have meant the starvation of everyone in May. Unquote. You see what they've done? The official U.S. government website has intimated that what these Spanish Roman Catholic killers were doing was a mercy killing to keep the people from starving to death. Now I ask my listeners a question. If these Spanish Roman Catholics were truly Christian, would they resort to the sword to coerce these Huguenots to renounce their Protestant faith and to become Christians, Catholics? If these people were truly men of God, as they claim, would they not have made provision if starvation were a threat to these people? They had the means, but that's not what they did. They killed them. They killed them in cold blood. They killed them because they would not renounce their Protestant faith. They would not swear to obey the Pope of Rome. They would not become Catholic. Notice that a modern government writer, a modern United States government writer, is speculating that perhaps the forced conversion killings were justified in order to avoid starvation later on. Is it possible that Romanists are writing for the state and the federal government? Let me tell you something. In 1764, when these events took place, 1565, only 48 years after the beginning of the Protestant Reformation, do you know what else had taken place? The Council of Trent, the bloody Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation Council of Trent, where Protestants were damned as heretics, and it was proclaimed by that council, by that Vatican council, by that ecumenical council, that it was a meritorious work to kill heretics. And this Spanish Roman Catholic ship, with its commander Menendez, was sent from Spain to go to Jacksonville, Florida, to kill these French Huguenots, and that's exactly what they did. Rome staked her claim to this country through Christopher Columbus. She intended to conquer all lands for the Pope. She intended from the beginning that this continent be Roman Catholic. And when French Calvinistic Huguenot Protestants found their way to Florida, Rome sent ships. Spain, Roman Catholic Spain, sent a ship and a killer force to wipe them out. And that's what they did after they refused to convert to Roman Catholicism. Could our beginning be just a mirror image of what Rome plans to do here at the end of the United States of America? That's the question I'll leave my listeners to assess for themselves. Anyway, he says, despite their success at Matanzas, Spain's ability to fully claim America suffered a critical blow with the sinking of the Spanish Armada in 1588. Praise God Almighty! Do you know that God looked down from heaven and saw the blood of the Huguenots splattered all over Jacksonville, Florida? And he said, this shall not happen again. And he destroyed the Spanish fleet in a wind, a holy wind from God. When the Spanish Armada was set to turn the Protestant Church of England back into the hands and control of the Roman Catholic Pope, when Spain was planning to take this country and destroy the French Huguenots in Florida, God wiped them out. God wiped them out with a holy wind. God intervened in our behalf. In the name of Protestantism, he behaved as you would expect a holy God to behave. He sunk the Spanish Armada in the channel. Rome, if she'd had her way, would have wiped out Protestantism before it ever even got a root established in this country. And God stopped it. What a crime have we committed against an all-holy God to join this ecumenical movement to have peace and unity with our assassins, our Roman Catholic assassins, the bloodiest cult ever to raise its godless head upon the face of the earth. What have we done? What have we done? Despite their success at Matanzas, Spain's ability to fully claim America suffered a critical blow when the sinking of the Spanish Armada in 1588, with Rome's greatest weapon destroyed, this paved the way for Protestant English settlers to dominate the New World. Praise God Almighty! Nevertheless, Rome never abandoned her desire to capture America, an ambition she pursues to this day. In her opinion, the Roman Catholic Pontiff, the Pope, as Christ's vicegerent, has power to reign over the United States, as well as all rulers of nations of the earth, as King of Kings. In 1962, author Lorraine Bettner, in his book Roman Catholicism, which I read right here on Inquisition Update some months ago, in 1962, author Lorraine Bettner documented this controversial statement from what is then known as the New York Catechism. Now listen, this is the official teaching instrument of the Roman Catholic Church. Here's what it says. The Pope takes the place of Jesus Christ on earth. By divine right, the Pope has supreme and full power in faith and morals over each and every pastor and his flock. He is the true vicar of Christ, the head of the entire church, the father and teacher of all Christians. He is the infallible ruler, the founder of dogmas, the author and the judge of councils, the universal ruler of truth, the arbiter of the world, the supreme judge of heaven and earth, the judge of all, being judged by no one, God himself on earth. Unquote. Now that's, from beginning to end, blasphemy. From beginning to end, that is blasphemy. And Roman Catholics are taught to believe this as a matter of dogma of their church. It's a salvific issue to Roman Catholics. Now, this claim that the Pope should be head of all is an ancient belief of the Roman Catholic Church, which could be generally known as papist doctrine. In other words, a papist is one who believes that the Pope is the replacement of Jesus Christ on the earth, and that he, as supreme ruler, should be worshipped as a god on this earth and obeyed, that his law is supreme on the earth. This is papist doctrine. It is a disparaging term that does not necessarily apply to all Catholics today, since not all Catholics agree to these ideas about papal authority. With this, it is worth noting that the Jesuits are said to be more papist than the papacy itself. In other words, they are more concerned with papal authority than the Pope himself, and have labored as no other order in the Roman Catholic Church to establish the Cathedra Petri, that is, the throne of Peter, the seat of the Pope, as the supreme seat of power in all the churches and governments of the world. Now, this is simply stated as the restoration of the old world order. That's how it was in the Dark Ages, when the popes ruled supreme over the earth. That is what the New World Order is. Now, under the witness of what was the witness of early Americans, it says Governor John Winthrop was a Puritan leader who helped to establish the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1630 and is one of the original founders of the city of Boston. He is most famous for his sermon given while standing on board the ship that brought him to the New World, in which he used the phrase "city on a hill" in reference to the colonization of America. Among his reasons for the Puritan migration were that it would be, quote, a service to the church of great consequence to carry the gospel into those parts of the world and to raise a bulwark against the kingdom of Antichrist, which the Jesuits labor to rear up in those parts, unquote. So Winthrop thought that it was necessary to fight the kingdom of Antichrist, the kingdom of the popes, which the Jesuits were working to establish in the colonies. Now, it says, by the phrase kingdom of Antichrist, Winthrop clearly communicated the Reformed belief, that is the Protestant belief, that the Pope's Holy Roman Empire was the end-time beast kingdom prophesied in the book of Revelation, which was spreading itself to countries such as China, Japan, and India. In North America, Rome's Jesuit missionaries had already infiltrated a number of Indian tribes, making converts to Catholicism. It is worth noting that Winthrop considered opposition to Rome to be an important part of the task of establishing America as a city on a hill. In fact, the Massachusetts Bay Colony took strong measures to protect itself from the infiltration of the Jesuit order. Quote, in 1647, Massachusetts Bay banned Jesuit priests from the colony on penalty of death. The English Puritans who settled the colony feared the Jesuits because the Jesuits were French, and France and England were engaged in a bitter struggle for control of North America. Finally, Jesuit missionaries had converted large numbers of Indians in Canada to Catholicism. Yet the declaration from the Massachusetts Bay leadership was not limited to Jesuit priests only, but included the whole of the Catholic priesthood itself. Quote, that all and every Jesuit, seminary priest, missionary, or other spiritual or ecclesiastical person, made or ordained by any authority, power, or jurisdiction, derived, challenged, or pretended from the Pope or the See of Rome, or that shall profess himself or otherwise appear to be such by practicing and teaching others to say any popish prayers, by celebrating masses, or using any other of the Roman Catholic ceremonies and rites of worship, who shall continue, abide, remain, and come into this province, or any part thereof, shall be deemed and accounted an incendiary and disturber of the public peace and safety, and an enemy to the true Christian religion. Unquote. This is knowledge that needs to be restored to American Christians today, that the Roman priesthood was feared as an incendiary, an inflammatory, and a disturber of the public peace and safety, and an enemy to true Christian religion. What has happened to that knowledge in this country today, especially among professing Christians? It says, to most Christians living in America today, this declaration by our early Protestant forefathers will likely be seen as intolerant and bigoted. But ask yourself this question: how tolerant is Christ of apostasy and idolatry? And I might add the word blasphemy. Will such things be allowed in heaven? Would you allow them in your church? If not, why would you allow them in your city if it were within your power to keep them out? Is your pastor being a cruel dictator by refusing to allow people to practice the Roman Catholic Mass in your sanctuary? Is he a tyrant because he won't allow people to kneel before statues of Jesus and Mary and pray to them? Is your church bigoted and intolerant because they reject the idea of bowing down to a crust of bread and worshiping it as the earthly manifestation of Christ? After reading Fulton's book and examining the current situation in our country today, we hope the sincere Christian reader will recognize that if the light of our country has grown dim, There can be no doubt that the lamp is being extinguished or diminished by the same powers that were responsible for the Dark Ages. That's the Pope of Rome. That's popery. That's Roman Catholicism, folks. It says Christians must remember that it was always the blood-drunken harlot, the Church of Rome, that sought to suppress the Word of God and destroy the true gospel at every turn, and with it the lives of the saints who believed the truth. The Puritans recognized this and passed legislation to limit the influence of Rome in America. Also consider that because of their extreme measures, it has taken more than 350 years for the Jesuits to scratch and claw their way back into power. While they have certainly worked behind the scenes, it is only after such a long time that a Jesuit priest could stand openly in a place of authority in the United States government. And he's speaking specifically about the house chaplain, a Jesuit priest. The spiritual advisor of the House of Representatives is a Jesuit priest. I hope my listeners can comprehend that the Jesuits have always worked silently, invisibly in the background to foment their revolution in this country. But now, at this critical time in our history, they're in plain sight. This can only mean they don't fear anything anymore in this country. And what does that bode for God's people? Are we about to see history repeated?
Okay, we've run out of time. Thanks, Tom. In tomorrow's broadcast, we will start with the subtitle of the foreword of Christian Pinto's book on the foreword, and the subtitle will be Sam Adams and the Rights of the Colonies. This is a continuation of a series of broadcasts that I'm doing. It's called, tomorrow will be part four, The Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid, Shaping Events in 2014. It seems to be that our history has been covered up.
Seems to be that this world is in a mess. Seems to be all life's just a test. Seems to be we think we've lived our lives, the best thing's clear to see, that only God will judge and bless. Seems to be that we've lived our lives in lies. Seems to be we are born and then we die. Seems to be life passes, it just flies, and it's clear to see that only God's truth will survive. Seems to be this world can bring fame, riches, medals of honor and glory, just for a time and a season. Fame, riches, medals of honor and glory, with no everlasting purpose or reason. Seems to be that this world is in a mess. Seems to be all life's just a test. Seems to be we think we've lived our lives, the best thing's clear to see, that only God will judge and bless. Seems to be